You're listening to Greater LA. It's KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiatakis. And guess what?
And now, if you want to join me again, it's time for Dodger Baseball!
Yeah. Remember baseball? It's back. This evening, the first pitch in a shortened Major League regular season will be thrown from the mound at Chavez Ravine. That's where KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb is.
Yeah, you're right, Steve. I mean, at Dodger Stadium, the only cars that are lined up here to get into the stadium are waiting for their COVID-19 tests. I mean, Dodger Stadium is one of the largest COVID testing centers in the entire county. And I got to tell you, it's been a real big adjustment for the Dodger faithful. I've been speaking with a number of them across the city, including right outside the ballpark here, about what it's like to watch the Blue Crew play this year.
It almost doesn't feel like it's happening. It's still, in a way, I still feel like, this is not really going to be you. There's going to be fans at the games. There's going to be, you know, it doesn't feel real. It feels like, I don't know. It's hard to describe.
That right there is Bobby James. And let me tell you, he is decked out. He's wearing one of those classic blue and white Dodgers hats and a replica uniform. He and his girlfriend came out here with their dog to take photos of the empty stadium because it's just so weird. There are no fans allowed for any of the games this season, and what a lousy time not to be able to watch the Dodgers in person. National League West champs, 7 years in a row. 2 trips to the World Series in that time. Maybe this year will be their chance. Well, at least there's TV.
What's your plan for this season for watching the team? What are you going to do? Well, I finally subscribed to a cable network. what is it? Sports Spectrum? Yeah.
He's talking about Sportsnet LA, the Dodgers TV channel. For years, Spectrum held exclusive rights to most of the games, and if you did not subscribe, tough luck. But now, just in time, for hungry fans who've had to wait 4 extra months for baseball and can't get into the stadium, Spectrum has reached a deal with AT&T, and way more of the LA audience can tune in.
Drills this ball to left center field. Chris Taylor with a missile.
If you're not watching the tube and it's just on in the background, it sounds normal. It could be from any other time. Fake crowd noise is piped in through stadium speakers. And there's even music when players get up to bat. They've got separate sounds for strikeouts and singles and home runs. But if you look closer, it is a bit strange. It looks like fans are sitting behind home plates, but they're fake. They're actually cardboard. If you want, you can go online and spend a couple $100, upload a picture of yourself, and the Dodgers will put it on one of these cardboard figures so fake you can attend all of the games. During the first couple exhibition matches at Dodger Stadium, the Arizona Diamondbacks got to try it all out. Manager Torey Lovullo put it this way in an interview with Arizona PBS. Quote, "You didn't feel that vibe, that heartbeat that goes along with playing games at the stadium. Still, it's better than nothing, especially if you make a living on the Dodgers."
I'm dying every month. I'm losing tons of money, dude. I'm losing $1,000 a day, man. It's crazy.
A day?
A day.
Robert Cook runs Grunion Sports Bar and Grill in Manhattan Beach, and this is a Dodgers bar. Instead of the usual 40 TVs mounted to the walls indoors, he's got one set up in the parking lot. He can't wait for tonight's opening game.
We're huge supporters of the Dodgers. Like, I'll be rolling out Dodger Dogs on Thursday night. We're gonna make it feel as best we can like we're at the game, man. We're gonna party, we're gonna have a good time, we're gonna be safe, we're gonna be keep our distance, but we're gonna try to like get a little of that vibe back, man. Hey, you know, like this is, you know, it's like, give us something, man. Give us something. Right?
Robert says he's had to cut his staff by more than half. He even kept his cooks on, despite barely selling any food.
Grunion's been here since 1974, and I definitely don't want it to go down on my watch, man. I'm trying everything I can, you know. I'm doing everything I can to keep this place going, and, you know, hopefully the Dodgers will give us another push, and maybe it'll just give us a couple hours. We can just kind of like, okay, this kind of feels normal again, you know?
Robert is prepared, and let's be honest, he's a little bit lucky, too. There's a big parking lot in the back of Grunion's, and the city of Manhattan Beach, well, it granted him a permit to serve customers outside. He's got it all set up for tonight. Several large wooden picnic tables spaced out. The beer taps are outside, too, on a trailer. Kelsey Dawson and Todd Nixon say they're going to be here. Todd is a regular and a diehard Dodgers fan. Just ask him how many Dodgers hats he owns.
70 to 80.
His Dodger jersey collection.
I like the Dodgers. Live and die by the blue.
And Kelsey, well, she works here as a server.
It's always way more fun to watch a sporting event at a bar than it is at your home. I don't know, when you watch it at home or you just like stream it, it's just not the same. But like when you have like the people around you cheering and stuff and you're drinking your favorite like beer, it's just, it slaps different.
Other major sports leagues are coming back too. The Lakers and the Clippers will play basketball a week from today, August 1st for the Kings, the Ducks, and the National Hockey League. As for the Dodgers, a familiar foe. Their division rivals, the San Francisco Giants. First pitch coming up soon tonight at 7 o'clock. For KCRW, I'm Benjamin Gottlieb.
Well, there's a bigger ball that's getting some publicity these days as well. LA is getting a new professional women's soccer team that'll go into action in the 2022 season. Good thing, since we're not gathering in large numbers for the time being. There's no name for the team yet. For now, it's just operating under the title Angel City. It's attracted a lot of star power interest from the business world to Hollywood and women's sports, including Serena Williams, Jessica Chastain, Eva Longoria, Mia Hamm, Abby Wambach, the list goes on and on, including Shannon Box, who played for many years for the U.S. women's national team, won 3 gold medals, and in 2015 won the World Cup. And she's with us right now. Hey, Shannon.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for including me.
You bet. And one of the founders of the team, Kara Nortman, is a partner in the tech venture capital firm Upfront Ventures. Kara, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
You bet. Well, what got this going? I mean, creating a new women's pro soccer team in LA. How did you decide to get involved in all this?
I mean, I'm a Southern California native, and I grew up playing sports and watching sports. My family was at the 99 game at the Rose Bowl, and we were just diehard fans of all things sports in LA. But it really started at the 2015 games, which Shannon was a part of inspiring it. And, you know, the quick story was, it was just one, I brought my 3 daughters, and it was one of the greatest kind of community sporting experiences I'd ever been to. People were painting faces and the play on the field with the most elite players in the world. It was just amazing. But I couldn't find jerseys to buy. And then when I got home, I couldn't find content to watch. And when I could find it, it was a single camera from far away. And so that kind of kicked off this just curiosity I had around why I couldn't get anyone to take my money. And I subsequently got to know Becca Rue, who runs the Players Association for the women's national team. And I really, I became very interested in helping her and learning and understanding as like way, you know, how do we make sure these women get paid? And we were going through some similar things in my industry in tech. And through those things in tech, I helped start an organization called, a nonprofit called All Raise. And I met Natalie Portman, who helped start an organization called Time's Up. And we were supporting pay equity and gender equity issues in our respective fields. And it turns out at the time I was talking to anyone who would listen, this was in 2018, about my passion for women's soccer and the elite athletes in the United States. And Natalie said, hey, you know what? I love soccer. My son wears a Rapinoe jersey one day and a Morgan jersey, and then the next day a Messi jersey. And about a year ago, she sent me a text message saying, why don't we look into buying a team? And I thought she was kidding. And when she said it for the third time, same line over text message, I realized she was serious and that this is what I actually did in my day job, was do things people told me was impossible. And so I started looking into it, and it kind of took off from there.
You found some folks who wanted to take your money.
I mean, it took a little while. It all looked easy when you look back. We got a lot of people telling us why it wouldn't work. But yeah. Last quick thing I'll say is it's the first women-founded, women-led, you know, women president and majority women-owned professional sports team in the country.
Shannon, your thrice winning gold medals notwithstanding, this was a proud moment in your life in 2015. Let's hear.
That's it.
What was it like, you know, having that moment?
Yeah, it was long due. And, you know, it was just something that
You know, there's the World Cup and there's the Olympics, and the World Cup is just for soccer, and it was something that had evaded us for a long time. And I think 2011, we were so close, and it was very devastating to come home without, you know, a gold medal from that tournament. And so 2015, we had this sense of this is the time that we need to do this. And, you know, it's just one of those tournaments that everything clicked. I'll never forget it.
Let's talk about your time on another, Shannon, on another women's professional soccer team in L.A. You played for a team called the L.A. Soul, which was only around for a year. The Brazilian player Marta was also on that team with you, who some consider to have been the greatest women's player of all time. That team fell apart. What happened? Tell us about your experience there.
You know, the L.A. Soul was, I think, a magical year for me. It was such a great experience. I loved the, you know, playing in three different leagues, three different women's professional leagues. I played on a lot of different teams in a lot of different cities. And to be able to play in my home city and to feel that both were connected, you know, I got to be home, but I also was playing the sport that I loved. I got to play in front of my friends and family. It was like playing in my backyard. And so that experience alone was amazing for me. And I played amazing. And I think because I was just happy, I was happy to be in the place that I was in. And then you look at the team, and it was one of the best teams I've ever played on as far as talent. One, you're looking at Marta, who is the best, you know, one of the best players in the world. And then, you know, you also had so many other players from France. You had Camille Abeli, you had players from China on our team, and you had Aya Miyama from Japan. And it just, what, and then you had our national team players, and you had the American players. So it was, we were so talented, and we ended up winning league and lost in the league championship. But I will never forget that year just because of the way that we played, but also how we were off the field and how I felt off the field. And so to lose that team, I was devastated. It was a thing that we kind of saw coming, and they had kind of told us that they are in for a year and that we have to try to find another investor. And we just couldn't make it happen. And it was just devastating to know that, you know, I was leaving my hometown to go somewhere else to play. So
being a woman's pro player, if you're not on the national team, gosh, it can be tough making a living. I mean, salaries are pretty low. The maximum salary for a player this year is $50,000 a year. The minimum is $20,000. I don't know how you do that in a city like L.A. What is life like as a professional women's soccer player in America?
You're not definitely not playing for the money. You're playing for the passion of the sport and, you know, the idea that you get to be a professional athlete. It was tough. You know, I was playing in the professional league before I was on the national team. And so I was having that same situation that a lot of players have of playing and, you know, going to your city that you play for 6 months, playing, and then having to come home for 6 months, sometimes living with your parents again, because you can't afford to live on your own and have a apartment for 6 months here and there, and then trying to find another job. And pretty much that's what I was doing. And to find a job for only 6 months is really difficult. So you kind of lean toward things that you know you can do, coaching and individual sessions and group sessions and little things like that that really aren't making you a lot of money either. And so it becomes very difficult. And I know a lot of players who finally had to retire and give up their favorite sport because they just couldn't handle the living situation.
Kara, the new LA team is set to debut in a couple of years, 2022. There's a lot to get done in the meantime. Tell us about some of the steps that you're doing to prepare to make this team a reality.
Yeah, well, when we were starting the team or considering starting the team, we talked to hundreds of people, including players, owners, union leaders, et cetera. And one of the things we heard is it's not just about paying the players. It is about investing in a strong front office and an innovative strong office. And so for me, as a venture capitalist, it always starts with your North Star leader and how they think about building a team. And so that's, you know, led by Julie Ehrman, and she's begun to build her business team. The remainder, you know, this year we're going to focus on announce, you know, the next set of announcements and work behind it will be announcing our colors and crest. We're spending a lot of time with the community and building sort of a community, building a team that resonates with the community and where the community is engaged from the ground floor. And that's one of the reasons we announced before we announce all of our colors, crest, approach, stadium, et cetera, is we want the community to be involved with that from the beginning. You know, we have some of the most incredible soccer fans and community in the world in Southern California. And then, you know, we'll work out, we'll announce our stadium deal, and tell everybody where we're going to play and, ticketing, sponsorships, et cetera. So that will all be over the next 6 to 12 months. And then we build out the soccer side, which is really fun. And, you know, we have a lot of sage players, and even coaches around the table who will hopefully, help us and give us feedback on that front. But, you know, the style of play that's consistent with our brand. And then we'll move into actually building the team, you know, with the soccer operations side. So it's, you know, I think we should be going the 2022 season, you know, 20 months from now, 18 months from now. So there's actually quite a bit to get done in that period of time. But that's sort of the rough timeline to launching in the spring of 2022.
You mentioned getting a team together, and we just heard from Shannon talking about the low salaries. You talked about the fact that salaries have been woefully low for so long. How do you do that if you're not able to pay? You know, so we saw Mookie getting whatever, giant, hundreds of millions of dollars. How do you do it? How do you acquire great talent?
Yeah, I think this is a really important point. So first of all, I think we are incredibly fortunate that the best players in the world are from here. And if they're not from here, want to play here, and that this is viewed as the global stage. And we heard that consistently from every current player we speak to. People may want to go over to Europe and make a bit more money or experience that style of play, but everybody wants to play here, and we're very lucky. So I think people are willing to make sacrifices while the league is building itself into larger and larger revenue streams. And I think, you know, the first goal is to get players, as Shannon was talking about, that players have to hold multiple jobs, get players to, you know, a salary level where this is their full-time job, where being in the NWSL is their first job, and being on the women's national team, if they are a part of that, is their second job. And it's kind of been the reverse, right? And it's only started to change in a way where these women are, you know, cultural icons in addition, you know, and activists and role models in addition to being players. And you got to build the revenue streams, and that's what we have to do. We have to, you know, we have to show all the things we believe to be true, which is that people want to watch it. And when it's distributed on CBS and Twitch and all of these very new things that have just happened in the last six months or year, that, you know, the media revenue will stream from that. And I'll just give you a quick example. I think I grew up in Southern California and LA in the 80s and 90s. And I remember when Magic Johnson got his $1 million a year for 25-year contract, and it blew everyone's minds. And now you have, you know, the NBA players making $25 million in a year. And you can look at similar stats in baseball, right? It was Johnny Bench, I was reading, made $100,000, and that was breaking news in the 70s. And now it's hundreds of millions of dollars for the top players. But it comes from media revenue and sponsorship revenue, not just ticket sales. So this market is sort of ready to turn. And, you know, the 10 owners around the table and the really strong front office and Lisa Baird in the commissioner's seat are all coming together. And with distribution and media revenue and all of these different things, we should be able to pay players more, but we start by getting them a living wage. And then from there you build so that hopefully somebody is citing this example 40 years from now and saying, do you remember when Shannon had to hold two jobs? and, you know, they're now citing stats for this when someone is talking about, I don't know, some other sport coming to the United States where players aren't paid properly. And this is the path we have to go on, and we have to do it collaboratively with all the different constituents and with an understanding of what it takes to get there, because it won't happen overnight, but it will happen.
Do you remember having those two jobs, Shannon?
I do, yes, because I was playing in the leagues before I was a national team player, and obviously I felt very blessed and lucky that I was able to make the national team and that became my other job. But, you know, and I think the other big thing too is that I always remember is that you were leaving every 6 months, so you never felt like you were in the community and there all the time to really get this big fan base that you were there all year and could understand that community. And it just, I think that's one thing that I'm really excited to be a part of too, is that, you know, Angel City wants to really dig deep into the community and become a part of it, and wants its players to do that too. And obviously with a better pay, and you can stay in the city that you're in and that you're playing in and have that experience that I had in LA when I played for the Soul. That was why that year was so magical, because I was playing where I lived, where I was from, and like I could be there all year round and enjoy being a part of that community.
Let's talk about the Soul, because, you know, it was around for a year. And Kara, you know, I wonder how anxious you are about getting underway in 2022. Good Lord, things are just so hard economically right now. There have been a number of women's soccer leagues, including the one where, you know, there was the LA Soul. History is littered with a lot of failed sports leagues in general. What are you doing to ensure that that doesn't happen here?
Well, I think, I mean, I actually think the route we went down was to say, if you just did what you thought was possible right this second, does it work? And the answer was yes. And then it was, what are the new revenue streams that you believe are coming in? And it was clear. And so, look, the Soul brought in 10,000 fans a game. LAFC and the Galaxy sell out their stadiums. Every time the women's national team comes, they sell out their stadiums. The Portland Thorns are getting, you know, 20,000 fans a game. So I'd say one is just rising popularity of the sport, due in large part to all the work Shannon and, you know, and her and the players, you know, all of the player, many of the players involved in sort of elevating the profile. It's the most played sport in Southern California. So just sort of awareness. We see it in the ticket numbers, and so you can make the math work just with that alone. I think Southern California is showing a huge appetite for, you know, incredible live sporting events featuring soccer. But then from there, I mean, really big thing is you can actually watch it. So, you know, I mean, 10 years ago, you either were on CBS primetime or you were not. And there were, you know, a handful of different, you know, kind of distribution channels. Now, literally, it's TikTok, it's Switch, it's Instagram Stories, it's, you know, it's Amazon, it's, you know, in addition to CBS, NBC, et cetera. And so you can actually get people to connect to a team and then watch it. I couldn't watch the NWSL players when I got back from the 2015 World Cup. And I didn't even have a team. I was watching, you know, Tobin Heath from what felt like 10,000 feet away with a single camera streaming it. And even though I was incredibly enthusiastic, it's just hard to follow that. Now I'm seeing high quality production on CBS, you know, with all, I'm learning about every player. And so with that comes media revenue, sponsorships and the like. And then we really view this as a brand. And so, you know, today's viewer, and tomorrow's viewer and fan, they live in digital and physical space. And so you're going to see, you know, Angel City, incarnations of Angel City, not just in the physical world, but in the digital. And, you know, there's a lot of different kind of ways and ideas we have to bring that to life. So I think there'll be new revenue streams that we're experimenting with for the very first time.
Shannon, do you have any thoughts on a name? I mean, we've got the placeholder, Angel City. You know, I'm putting you on the spot here with Kara right now.
I'm terrible.
Come on,
that.
Come on, give us a name, Kara. What's the name of this team going to be? We want to know.
How about We Love Shannon Box?
Oh, that's that's a nice name. Play boxes. No, I don't know about that. I want to thank you both. Shannon Box, former player on the U.S. Women's National Team, involved obviously in Angel City. Kara Nortman, partner in the tech venture capital firm Upfront Ventures and a co-founder of the team as well. The new women's professional soccer team. Thanks to you both.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Millions of people across the country have lost work in recent months because of the coronavirus pandemic, and Los Angeles is certainly feeling that pain as well, especially in the restaurant industry. City Controller Ron Galperin recently released a report that says the food service industry has lost about 75,000 jobs, the most across all industries in LA. With indoor dining and bars currently shut down, some servers and chefs and cooks, bartenders, hosts, bussers, they're out of work. But that doesn't mean they're out of luck. Some folks in the food service industry are using this moment to reinvent the wheel, trying innovative ways to entice customers into their food experiences all across the Southland. And Mona Holmes writes about it for Eater LA. She's been watching this story unfold. Hey, Mona.
Hi, Steve.
So as I mentioned at the outset, I mean, the food industry is obviously hurting a lot. One aspect that hasn't gone away, though, is the pop-up. So explain these pop-ups that are all over the place now.
Previously, pop-ups served a different purpose in LA. It used to be this great way for locals, for chefs, even New York restaurants to come out and try stuff out amongst the populace here. And there's also, just a note, some less restrictive laws about food preparation at home. And another thing that's different right now is that a lot of these pop-ups that we're going to talk about are really focusing on comfort food. So maybe that's what we need right now.
Yes, we need a lot of comfort for sure. You mentioned innovating. They're trying to innovate. Can you run through a few of those innovations that the folks have come up with? I mean, what are a few that have stood out to you? Like, what are they doing?
Well, I'll tell you, there's this really great pop-up called Amiga Amore, and that's run by Chef Danielle Duran Zecca, and she combines Mexican and Italian flavors, and she just started out at the beginning of the pandemic making small comfort food packages for people, and ultimately that grew to people wanting larger meal items and then meals for the whole week, and that's when she launched her pop-up. And everything changes, you know, during the weeks, and you might get something that has to do with that theme, or it might be straight up carnitas or key lime pie. And it's pretty wonderful. And then there's another longtime chef named Laurent Quignoux, who's been in Los Angeles for a very long time, for at least like 35 years. And he used to host a popular and sometimes weekly tasting at his home in Highland Park, but recently moved to Riverside, but he still wants to cook. And that's the common thread here. These people miss cooking. These chefs miss cooking for people. And what he does is, now that he's moved to Riverside, he cooks these very traditional, gorgeous meals at home and delivers them to Echo Park and Pasadena for pickups. And then there is Eliza Socolo. She makes this amazing challah and other baked goods. And her Instagram is so good. And she's a photographer who just captures her creations in ways that make them look like you can't live without them. And so in addition to the bread, she makes cookies. What's great is that a portion of her profit goes to nonprofit organizations, including one that's close to my heart called Loveland Foundation that offers free therapy to young Black women.
You've said it a couple of times in the course of this chat between you and me, and that was comfort food. A lot of these places are focusing on comfort food, and we need comfort, I think, at this time. Although we've had months of trying to comfort ourselves. Do you think that's going to last? Mm-hmm. I mean, is that the new normal, that we just want that comfort food and we're all just going to be way overweight?
It certainly is. That comfort comes in many forms, I might add. You know, I did notice that one of, not a pop-up, but a bakery in Inglewood is selling out every single day of their sweets. I think that's a good indicator of what people are craving. And a lot of these pop-ups are fulfilling that need. Another pop-up is AM Smash, which is this breakfast sandwich pop-up by this couple, the Schildebrands. And all they do is really great breakfast sandwiches. I mean, who doesn't want a really good egg, cheese, and house-made sausage sandwich in an English muffin right now? But then, you know, I said that comfort comes in many forms. There's also this fun kind of comfort, and that comes from singing Telegrams by this organization called Disco Dining Club. And so what happens is you place an order and these folks bring this very whimsy masked person to your doorstep. It's really challenging to describe, but you can only imagine with singing telegrams kind of doing a similar thing. But also too, I got this very comfort food box from a organization called Hits Kitchen, and they collaborate with chefs to build a box. And so it was this old school Italian themed by Chef Joe Sasto last week. You open it up and it's got two candles, a tablecloth, food for reheating like lasagna and wine and cannoli. Well, you wouldn't reheat the wine, along with a Spotify playlist with Italian music from the 50s and 60s like Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra. And it was really fun, super comforting experience, along with super comforting pop-ups. It's just, it's been kind of a joy to watch this. It's kind of a light in the midst of all this craziness. And right now, I'm really appreciating it.
Mona Holmes from Eater LA, of course, our regular here on Greater LA. Mona, as always, grazie.
Prego.
By the way, we'll have more information on those pop-ups at our website a little later this afternoon. Hope you'll check it out. KCRW.com/GreaterLA. Share your thoughts with us there. What's going wrong? What's going right? Subscribe to the podcast while you're there. KCRW.com/GreaterLA. That's going to do it for us today. Next week, a death in Echo Park has sparked outrage among the unhoused. How hotel workers are trying to stay safe in the middle of this pandemic. And in the coming weeks, we're going to have a treat for you. Consternation among LA neighbors on the Nextdoor app. Well, that's not necessarily a treat. The treat will be we're going to bring it to life with some dramatic readings. I hope you'll join us in the coming days and weeks. Jenna Cagle, Sonia Geis, Amy Ta, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, Mario Diaz, Desmond Taylor, Mario Saavedra, Jody Adler, Mike Newport, and Christian Bordahl all had hands on the show this week. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great night.